Hi, guys. My name is Jennifer Lewis. I serve our church as an RE teacher for the past couple of years, and I've been a member of the church for about 3 years now. Everyone is invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in the fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, right through these doors behind me. If you're a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of the gray hymnal. You can hand that to an usher or put it in the offering plate. And if you do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months, and that'll let you know what's going on here at church. If you have children with you this morning, they're invited to attend our religious education program during the service when we ask the children to leave for classes later in the service. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children, and adults are encouraged to attend the adult RE programming at 11:50. If you would like to learn more about this church and or about Unitarian Universalism, there's an information rack in our fellowship hall where you can find pamphlets and other information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. Of course, we are encouraging you to speak with members to learn more and encourage current members to seek out visitors and share with them this beloved community. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now, I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. I did. Okay, and now some announcements for the good of the church. At 11:50 a.m. today, Reverend Sunshine will facilitate a conversation about race and the events in Ferguson. We will meet at the fireplace in the worker room. On Sunday, December 7th at 11:50 a.m., visitors and friends interested in learning more and or becoming a member of First Unitarian are encouraged to attend the New to UU program. Next Sunday's worship service will be our Christmas pageant. Join us for costumes and carols. The deadline to apply for the new Worship Associate Program is December 15th. Contact Pastor Sunshine if you're interested in applying for that program. An announcement by Mary Johnson. Please make sure you sign up to usher in December. The church is sponsoring a family at the Oasis Women's Center for Christmas. The center provides housing for women and children who are victims of violence. We will sponsor one family this year. That means 5 total items per family member with a value of less than $30 for each item. Please sign up on the board in the Kate Worker Room and return your wrapped gifts by December 14th. The Guest at Your Table program. The elementary class will be creating some stone soup today in class. It will be available during coffee hour, and they will be accepting donations for the UUSC Social Service Program, Guest at Your Table. Look for the soup and the Guest at Your Table box on the buffet. And now our prelude.
We have traveled a long way this evening to be here, and we are grateful that we are able to sing these songs, voicing how we feel about the things that we see in life. And we think that it's very important to maintain freedom. So we say, we who believe in freedom, we cannot rest. We cannot be complacent. We may stay alert, stay active, and stay involved. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Oh, how can you rest?
We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black. Mm-hmm.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Oh, how can you rest?
We who believe in freedom cannot rest until they come. The older I get, the better I know that the secret to my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm.
Worship today in the words of Fannie Lou Hamer. When they asked for those to raise their hands who'd go down to the courthouse the next day, I raised mine. Had it high up as I could get it. I guess if I'd had any sense, I'd have been a little scared, but what was the point of being scared? The only thing they could do to me was kill me, and it seemed like they'd been trying to do that a little bit at a time ever since I could remember. As Lucas Koch lights our chalice today, please join me in reciting these words.
You'll be reciting them later.
Oh, please listen as I recite these words. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Our opening hymn will be number 155, Circle Round for Freedom.
Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow. Start over again, ready? without the music now. Some of you may know a different version of this, and so sing what you know. Remember, though we may want to strive for perfection, we're not going to. So have it be enough. Here we go.
Circle round for freedom. Circle round for peace. For all of us in prison. Circle for release. Circle for the planet. Circle for each soul. For the children of our children. Keep the circle whole.
Please be seated.
Yes, I'm up. Right.
How's everybody doing today?
Okay.
Yeah, hanging in there? It's been a week, hasn't it? Yeah. Does this look familiar? Yeah. Can somebody tell me what's going on up there right now? What's in that picture? What's happening there? A demonstration. Absolutely. How many of you have been to a demonstration yourself, have been in a protest? Okay. How many of you have been in a protest this week? That's not as many as I would have thought. I know that some of our folks who've been in protest this week are recovering from an illness. I ask that you send blessings to the Crone Willis family as they are, I think, probably recovering from a stressful week living in Ferguson. Why do we protest? Can somebody tell me why we protest? To create change, absolutely.
Because of injustices.
Yes. Any other reasons we protest?
Concerned about what happened in the past.
Concerned about what happened in the past? I'm going to paraphrase Paul and say because we're angry. That was not the word he used, but close enough. Any other reasons we might protest? How many of you have participated in protests that did create change? I know I have. Anybody protest in the 60s during the civil rights movement? That definitely affected change. Maybe not as much as we would have hoped, but affected change. Okay, let's go to the next one. Somebody tell me what's happening here.
Protest.
That's actually Gordy. He's the son of Reverend Julie Taylor. Some of you have heard her speak here before. And that sign actually got him in the national news. Why do you think this was so powerful?
Because a child is speaking.
And he did create that sign. Those are his words. His parents wrote it for him because he can't write yet, but those are his words. What does it say?
Stop hurting people.
That's right. Why do you think he thinks there are people being hurt? Because they are. How are they being hurt? People are being killed. People are being injured. Do you think that's all it is?
No.
No. It's because people have been being killed and being injured for hundreds of years. And some people think we finally got over it, and a lot of people really don't think we did. Let's do the next one. What's happening here? What do you think they're singing for?
Justice.
Justice, change. What else?
Freedom.
Freedom. Any others?
Emotional release.
Emotional release, certainly.
Attract attention.
To attract attention. The thing is when we stand up for freedom, we stand up for change, or I should say rise up so we're not being ableist. When we rise up for change, we do all kinds of things. We might protest in the streets. I particularly enjoy a good protest because it really feels good to walk with people of like mind and to say this matters. And you only protest because other avenues are not working for the listening ears of our public and our government. You might hold up a sign, like Gordy did. You might sing a song. I personally love singing songs. Anybody else like to sing songs for change? You know, there's even a website called Singing for Change. It brings musicians from all over the world together. It's the next one. What's happening here? Some of you actually know this one. You were there when this happened. Somebody tell me what was happening? A white guy was carrying the amp for a group of African-American young adults who were, what were they doing?
Protesting.
In chanting. They were chanting. They were shouting. They were singing. What's amazing to me is he held that on his head for almost an hour and a half and didn't put it down. That takes some dedication. So again, speaking up for change, making sure our voices are heard. What's the next one? What's happening here? I heard tear gas. What about tear gas? Right, so there's somebody covering their face to protect themselves from tear gas? Yes. Anybody know where this is?
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, that's right. What were they protesting for?
Elections.
For elections. They want democracy in their country, and China wants something different, and they want to be heard. Okay, and the next one? What's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
What can you do to create change with a telephone? Alert other people, call your representatives. What kind of representatives? Elected government officials, sometimes unelected government officials. And the next one? It may not be obvious, but she is writing a letter. Why do you think she's writing a letter?
Order to get change.
Again, order to get change, right? Telling people, spreading the good news. And here's the thing. How many of you consider yourselves to be a young person? Young people have a lot of power to create change because it's your future that's on the line. You know? By the time we get all the justice that we're working on, hopefully I'm in retirement if I'm not dead, right? This change, this work we're doing, is for the young people. It's for those of you sitting in these pews. What's the next one? What is this one about?
The need for political action to change things.
I'm going to ask somebody who hasn't spoken yet to answer this question. Our extroverts are getting a lot of stage time. Yes?
To vote yourself and to also try to help it so that more people vote.
To vote yourself and to encourage others to vote. And I think the other one, those of you who were at Jim Elliott's memorial service heard the story of Jim decided to run for school board because he didn't like the other candidate who was running. So the other thing is, whether you want to be in political office or not, you're probably the person we want there. So it's not just voting, it's also considering yourself the agent for that change. So, in Ferguson this week, there's been a lot of focus on the violence by a very small handful of people who did a whole lot. Unfortunately, that has overshadowed, in many ways, the many thousands of people who have been protesting for change. To say that we don't want our young people to be killed or to be hurt by the police, or by the system that they are part of. We don't want any more young people, particularly black young people and people of color, to go from school to prison, to be sent to jail because they are truant. Some of you may know about a 6-year-old who was arrested because they cussed out their teacher in Texas and now has a conviction on their record. We need to create change, and it is in your hands. And so my question all week has been to everyone, what is the little thing that you promised to do this month to help create a better world? I now invite our children to go on to their classes.
Rejoice in love we know and share, in love and beauty everywhere. Rejoice in truth that makes us free, and in the good that yet shall be.
Please join me in a responsive reading. The words will be projected behind me. We envision a world where your life and safety is tied to mine.
Because otherwise our lives are in danger.
We envision a world where language is used for wholeness and liberation.
Because what we say has power.
We envision a world where your liberation is linked to my liberation.
Because we are interconnected.
We envision a world where voting will be an empowering event.
Because justice depends on it.
We envision a world where war and violence will be considered reprehensible.
Because dehumanizing others dehumanizes me.
Hold on one second.
We envision a world where creation, ingenuity, discomfort, and compassionate criticism will be welcomed.
Because we need these things to grow.
We envision a world where all are valued, loved, and respected.
Because humanizing you humanizes me.
We envision a world where all living beings will have access to clean water, fresh food, shelter, beauty, love.
Because our bodies, hearts, minds, and souls depend on.
We envision a world where fear will be recognized as an emotion and not as an authority.
Because our lives depend on.
We envision a world where humans think ahead and consider impact on future generations.
Because their lives depend on.
We envision a world where respect for the earth is as important as respect for oneself and one's community.
We do these things because they matter. Because our lives depend on it.
Because all of our lives depend on it. I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments. Now I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning. Spoken and unspoken, may the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all of our hearts, a burden shared be a load lightened.
As we go into our time of meditation and prayer, I do invite you to keep the Elliott family in your prayers. Jim Elliott passed away this past week, and we had the memorial service for him yesterday. I know that they were having a hard time with everything going on, and Phyllis had a fall on her way out of the building. She's okay, but I know she's just feeling overwhelmed with a lot going on. So please keep them in your thoughts and prayers and meditations this day. I invite you now into a time of prayer, meditation, or contemplation, as is your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. Now a deep breath in so your neighbor can hear you, in and out, and slowly in and out. I invite you to become aware of this moment, of this space, of this moment, this second passing in time. I invite you to be aware of your body, of the aches and pains that maybe you try to ignore, of the parts of your body that feel fine, of this one home that gives you the opportunity to move through this most amazing world. We ask for guidance this day as we learn with our society how to disagree,
to disagree vehemently, and yet to create healing and wholeness for those millions who experience violence, who experience violence this day and every day. For those who have inherited injustice upon injustice and yet have found to find freedom. Particularly for those people of color, for Native Americans who this week witnessed yet another holiday telling lies about who they are, to African Americans who yet again lost another young black boy for holding a pretend gun, to Asian Americans who are too often lifted up as these scientists and mathematicians and intelligent all beyond belief, so that white folks may feel normal. To people who are Latino, Latina, Hispanic, Mexican, Cuban, and from many places in the Southern and Central Hemisphere, we offer our blessings. We offer our congratulations to those who have found respite in this past couple of weeks, and to those who continue to risk their lives to find freedom, to find hope, and to escape total terror in their home countries. We offer blessings to those who are white, Caucasian, those who sit or walk or rise up with those who are experiencing injustice, aware of their privilege and attempting to use it for good. To those who are white and Caucasian who are confused and know that they do not fully understand what is going on. For those white and Caucasian folks who not only do not understand, but refuse to see the real lived experience of millions. May we be patient with one another. May we hold kindness in our hearts while being vehemently resistant to all that demeans, that devalues, that prevents the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And so today I offer you this Lord's Prayer adapted. Spirit of life that dwells with us and in us, let us honor the spirit of all life in our incessant search for justice and peace. May we experience a world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. May we have the will to live up to our covenant of right relationship in our congregations, our communities, our nation, and our world, that we might be a people on the side of the oppressed, the poor, and the marginalized. Give us today what we need, that we might have the will and strength to build a new society. Forgive us our shortcomings. Do not let us fall into the temptation of believing ourselves already new people. And deliver us from the evil of forgetting that our lives are not ours alone. I invite you now into a time of silent prayer, meditation, or contemplation. And as we come back into this space, may we commit and recommit ourselves to receiving and offering forgiveness, to transforming the world through our presence and our action, to committing and recommitting ourselves time and again, knowing that we will not repair this world in our lifetimes, but we may leave it a little better than when we found it. I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. One more time so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. Blessed be. Amen. And speaking of action, I invite you to rise, as your spirits and bodies allow. We're going to sing about the Spirit doing and being in the world. We will sing hymn number 1024. We will probably muddle through it once as practice and then attempt to sing it for real after that. Ready?
Take a collection of money of bounty from this community to support the work of this congregation and of Unitarian Universalism. We do this because we recognize that individually we cannot do much as we can as a community. We invite you to give until it feels good, to give what you can, and to know that your gift matters. It is through your hands and hearts that we make the world worthy of our children and our children's children. This gift is a piece of the precious light that shines for the world to see. This morning's offering will be greatly received. May it be joyfully given.
So I'm driving down the street with my four-year-old nephew. He knocking back a juice box, me a Snapple, Today, y'all, we are doing manly shit. I love watching the way his mind works. He asks a million questions. Uncle, why is the sky blue? Uncle, how do cars go? Uncle, why don't dogs talk? Uncle, uncle, uncle. He asks uncle, uncle, uncle. He asks uncle, 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 as if his voice box is a warped record. I try my best to answer every question I do. I say it's because the way the sun lights up the outer space is because engines make the wheels go. It's because their minds aren't quite like ours. I say yes, no, no, yes, no, yes, no. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we laugh. He smiles, looks out the window, spots a cop car, drops his seat and says, oh man, Uncle, 5-0, we gotta hide. I'll be honest. I'm not happy with the way we raise our black boys. Don't like the fact that he learned to hide from the cops well before he knew how to read. Angrier that his survival depends more on his ability to deal with authorities than it does his own literacy. Get up, I yell at him. In this car, in this family, we are not afraid of the law. I wonder if he can hear the uncertainty in my voice. Is today the day he learns that uncle is willing to lie to him? That I'm more human than I am hero. We both know the truth is far more complex than do not hide. Both know too many black boys who disappeared, names lost, know too many Trayvon Martins, Oscar Grants, and Abner Louimas, know too many Sean Bells and Amadou Diallos, know too well that we are the hard-boiled sons of Emmett Till. Still, we both know it's not about whether or not the shooter is racist. It's about how poor black boys are treated as problems well before we're treated as people. Black boys in this country cannot afford to play cops and robbers if we're always considered the latter. Don't have the luxuries of playing war if we're already in one. Where I'm from, seeing cop cars drive down the street feels a lot like low-flying planes in New York City. Where I'm from, routine traffic stops are more like minefields. Any wrong move could very well mean your life. And how do I look my nephew in his appled face and tell him to be strong when we both know black boys who are murdered every day simply for standing up for themselves? I take him by the hand, I say be strong. I tell him, I say be smart. Be kind and polite. Know your laws. Be aware of how quickly your hand moves to pocket for wallet or ID. Be more aware of how quickly an officer's hand moves to holster for gun. Be black. Be a boy. Have fun. Because this world will force you to become a man far more quickly than you'll ever have to need to. He lets go of my hand, but uncle, he asks, uncle, what happens if the cop is really mean? And it scares me to know that he, like so many other black boys, is getting ready for a war I can't prepare him for.
That was Javon Johnson.
You to join me in reciting the offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. Now for a reading from the new president at Starking School for the Ministry, which is the Unitarian Universalist Seminary in Berkeley, California. Rose was a longtime minister at Fourth Universalist in New York. Her husband died some time ago, but this was written before he passed on. The title of it is called Fears. He phones me more than an hour ago to say he was on his way home, but I have yet to hear the scrape of the iron gate, the rattling keys. So I worry. Most married women fret about a tardy husband. young black women like myself worry more. For most people in New York, the urban boogeyman is a young black man in sneakers. But we live in Central Harlem, where every young man is a black man and wears sneakers. So we learn to look into the eyes of our young males and discern the difference between youthful bravado and the true dangers of the streets. No, I have other fears. I fear white men in police uniforms, white teenagers driving by, thin, panicking, middle-aged white men on the subway. Most of all, I fear that their path and my husband's will cross one night as he makes his way home. I fear that some white person will look at him and see only their own nightmare, another black man in sneakers. But he's also a writer, an amateur cyclist, a lousy basketball player, his parents' son, my life's companion. When I peek out the window, the visions in my head are those of blind white panic at my husband's black presence. Once upon a time, I was vaguely ashamed of my paranoia about his safety in the world outside our home. After all, he's a grown man, but he's a grown black man on the streets alone. I am reminded over and over how dangerous white people can be, how their fears are still a hazard to our health. When white people are ruled by their fears of everything black, every black man is a rapist, even a murderer. Tell you, I have spent all week pondering this sermon and what I would say to you. And if many of you are like me, I spent most of my week going to protests, praying, being with people who needed support. I had the privilege of sitting with some children who are from Ferguson and talking about their fears. And in almost equal measure, I found myself debating with liberal whites, conservative whites, members of my own family who are white and mixed race, and defending the reality, the real lived experience of millions of black Americans and people from other countries. And I'll tell you, the conversation's hard, right? It's hard to talk about this. It's hard to find the words to say this is why this is happening. And part of why it is hard is because the system in which we were born into has made it as hard as possible to have language, to have the language to talk about what's going on, to have the experience in having healthy communications, having the experience of making real social change. The only way we have had significant social change around race in this country is either by executive order from a president, be it Abraham Lincoln or Barack Obama, or through an order from the Supreme Court and the force of the National Guard. And knowing that that is the case, how do we affect change? How do we affect change? I must say I'm overwhelmed. Emotionally, mentally, physically. It's been hard to sleep this week. In no small part because my lungs have turned against me. The smell of embers from Ferguson floating into Florissant. Allergies to someone's rage. And what's sad is I honestly don't believe those fires had anything to do with the protests, had anything to do with the topic of race. In fact, the fact that it was mostly national chains who were burned tells me there's probably some anarchist out there really proud of themselves for trying to damage the system and take the conversation away from what it needs to be on, which is children and young adults and everyday human beings being killed because maybe they have some cigars in their pocket or a plastic gun. I am stuck with the reality that no matter what it comes down to, what happened in Ferguson was bound to happen. There is nothing that Officer Wilson or Michael Brown could have done to prevent that moment in many ways. I don't blame Officer Wilson specifically because while he is ultimately responsible for his actions, it is the system in which he was born that made it possible for him to see Michael Brown as somebody who was inherently violent and dangerous and worthy of being killed. Made it possible for him to shoot a young man 6 times before finally putting a shot in his head that killed him. Made it possible for all of this to happen. One of the most common arguments I hear this week is, well, you know, race isn't real, right? So why are we doing all of this? Oh boy. You're right. There is no scientific basis for race, but race is real. Why is it real? Because we made it. We as a society made it real. And now that it is in our hands to undo it, to recognize it, to find a path through. It is on us that the Supreme Court in the 1900s said, these are the people who are less than, and these are the people who are white. It was the Supreme Court who said, okay, you Irish and you Italians, yeah, we'll let you in the thing so you can stop fighting with us. But you people from India, you people with dark skin, you will forever be the other. And no law from the civil rights movement can undo that reality. We created race in this country by law, by word and deed, over and over again. In fact, some of the laws we live with this day are over 500 years old, based on papal bulls issued by the Catholic Church that are used as the basis for stealing Native American lands for corporate use today. Race is very real. We have to deal with the realities. We have to deal with what's true. Not what we wish was, or what we imagine was, or what society has told us, but what is true. One of my favorite authors on the topic of race is named Lillian Smith. She wrote a book called Killers of the Dream. Yeah, she's good. She wrote this in 1948 in South Carolina. A white woman saying, race is real and it's our problem. And she wrote this, and I think it describes well the system in which we were born in. She writes, something was wrong with a world that tells you that love is good and people are important, and then forces you to deny love and to humiliate people. I knew, though I would not for years confess it aloud, that in trying to shut the Negro race away from us, we have shut ourselves away from so many good, creative, honest, deeply human things in life. I began to understand slowly at first, but more clearly as the years passed, that the warped, distorted frame we have put around every Negro child from birth is around every white child also. Each is on a different side of the frame, but each is pinioned there. And I knew that what cruelly shapes and cripples the personality of one is as cruelly shaping and crippling the personality of the other. I began to see that though we may, as we acquire new knowledge, live through the new experiences, examine old memories, gain the strength to tear the frame from us, yet we are stunted and warped, and in our lifetime cannot grow straight again, any more than it can a tree put in a steel-like twisting frame when young, grow tall and straight when the frame is torn away. Immaturity. In other words, it is really hard to unlearn what we have been taught. And to think that we will end racism in our lifetimes is a fool's errand. We will not. any more than the people 50 years ago did not end racism through their efforts. And it is not to say that there haven't been improvements. There have. It isn't to say that having an African-American president isn't a step in the right direction. It is. And yet we have to recognize that while we have an African-American president, we have an African-American president who can be disrupted by Congress without a word, who can be told to go back to Africa, even though that's not where he's from, can be routinely again and again told racist things. And yet somehow our society would like to believe that he is evidence that racism has ended. I think what we need to know is that definition of race is not what we always thought it was. Race is not just the KKK rolling into town and lynching another young person. Racism isn't just that experience of walking down the street and hearing someone shout the N-word. Racism isn't just overt. It is covert. It is insidious. It is woven into every aspect of our lives, the systems in which we were born, the prisons in which we exist today. It's amazing to me to know that just in the 1970s, there were only 375,000 people in U.S. prisons. Today, there are more than 2 million, and most of them are African American. It is interesting to know that African Americans deal and use drugs at almost exactly the same rate as white Americans, and yet are arrested far more frequently when white folks are sent to treatment far more frequently. It is worth noting that most African Americans get the longest possible sentence, and white folks tend to get the least. And what is even more amazing to me is this new school-to-prison pipeline in which children are thrown into juvenile hall at a very young age, in a place where they learn how to commit crime, they learn that the system is against them, and that no one's got their back. If I had been in school in this day and age, there are a number of things that might have gotten me arrested by a police officer. And that is true for every person here. Whether it's being late to school or talking back to a teacher, there are any number of things that children do that get them arrested and sent to juvenile hall, even when they're in elementary school. And the result is that they learn how to live a certain kind of life, and prison becomes the thing that's most comforting, the place that they know. In the medical world, we still have a long way to go. Those of you who are aware of the Tuskegee research that occurred in the earlier part of the 20th century, in which young black men were given syphilis, and that syphilis was left to run its course even after we had a cure, to see how it would play out. And time again, black bodies have been used for scientific research, have been tied down, used as examples, have been sterilized, have been subsumed. So much so that there is almost no trust in the medical system by the African American community even to this day. Words of African-American womanist ethicist Emily M. Towns. She puts it this way. We need to offer a lament to the world, to the lives of black people. And by putting their suffering into the form of a lament of people of Judah, they had to acknowledge that there was a crisis in their midst. And this fuels much of the pains and marks of suffering. By putting words to their suffering, the community could move to a pain or pains that could be named, and then from that addressed. Lament is, in a word, formful. When done as a communal lament, it helps the community to see the crisis as bearable and manageable in community. And so she goes on through her book to describe the medical experience of African Americans, and the systemic violence against them, and offers a lament, putting words to what is true for their experience. And so we have to decide what's next. What are we lamenting this week? What are we lamenting as we walk in the streets? What are we lamenting as we lie on the ground and close the mall for a day? What are we doing when we stop subway stations from moving? What do we do when we lament through action? Because clearly, words have not been enough. Before I go on to what we do, I want to take a moment and talk about the violence this week. I was actually speaking with Reverend Kleber on Friday about the memorial, and he was asking about the events here. His heart's here because he lived here for so long. And he, like me, had been dealing with some comments about this violence. And he said, you know, my thing is, this violence is normal, right? This happens anytime there's protest. It's not the protesters, it's people who take advantage of it. It's like, exactly right. Time and again, whether it's a World Health Organization protest or it is a protest against the establishment, there are people out there who take advantage of the situation to cause trouble. What is really sad in my mind this week is that our St. Louis Metro Police Department and National Guard had to know this was going to happen. It's happened every time this kind of thing has occurred. And yet, they stood and protected the police station. And they weren't in the streets. They didn't protect the businesses. They weren't at the site where Michael Brown was killed. They weren't anywhere else in the city but on their territory. And then the next day, as I was driving home from one of the protests, there was the National Guard in the parking lot where all those cars were burned. And I thought, a lot of good you're doing to us today. There they were in front of those stores that had already been burned and destroyed. And my thought was, where were you yesterday? And that is part of that system of injustice, focused on protecting the world from the black people who were gathered in front of their building and not protecting the black people from those who were truly violent in their town. That is systemic violence. So yes, there was violence this week. And I don't condone it. I don't think anybody who's been working on this condones that kind of violence. But we are not going to stop talking just because a few people don't know how to handle themselves. So what's next? Us, prophethood of all believers. The words of James Luther Adams. He says that Unitarian Universalists are a priesthood of all believers. That means we are all ministers. We are all agents in this world. We are all the ones called to do and be and live our values. But he said, in addition to that priesthood, that ability to create our own theology and determine our own path, we are also a prophethood of all believers. We are the ones, because we have that morality and that compass and that sense of direction, that it is not enough to say it and to know it. We must do. We must be prophets. We must speak out. I appreciated a couple of letters this week from some of you who said, you know, Sunshine, I can't go protest, but I did this one thing. And all I could say was, good job. All you can do is the one thing that you can do. Tuesday, I was out. I did a whole bunch of stuff. Come Wednesday, I was so burned out from staying up all night looking at video footage and doing the posts that I've been doing on Facebook and all of that I needed a day off. You don't have to be in the streets every day. The first thing you can do is listen. The number one thing that I think is holding us back in these weeks, in these days of violence, and has for decades and centuries, is the inability to listen to someone and let their experience be true. An African American goes on TV and says that this is systemic violence, that this is against me, and your first thought is, well, what about this and this and this? You're not listening. You've already made your opinion. We need to listen first, not with our own judgment, with our own awareness. We need to listen knowing that we cannot know that person's experience. and we need to help our society do the same. As I so often say, can you imagine if our politicians learned to listen in that way? If our leaders learned to listen in that way? If our police learned to listen in that way? Listening, not assuming that you are right or that there's something off about their experience, but letting that truth just be true. The second thing is to learn the history. Go out and buy the people's history of the United States. Go out and buy resources or go to workshops. Attend the Races, the Power of Illusion training. Read Dear White People. Go see the movie Dear White People. It will rustle you, but I promise you it will be a good experience. Next month, we'll be showing Fruitvale Station, which is about the murder of Oscar Grant by a BART police station police officer. Go out and learn about experiences that are not your own, for our lives are not ours alone. Third thing you need to do is determine, are you needing to lead or follow in this situation? What I know is, as much as I may be in a leadership role with you, when I am on the streets, I am a witness and I am a follower, because I am not black. Just as I would hope every African-American person who joins in a protest for indigenous peoples would let me lead, because that's my fight. Or for transgender people, or for any community. Know, should you lead or should you follow? Where does your power lie? And if you are not an African-American, you are not a leader in this struggle, you are an ally. And you can affect serious change just by being present. Why did I get out of my car and go to that protest on Tuesday? Because I thought a person who appears white with a clergy collar might help bring some peace. Don't know if it did or didn't. But it was what I could do in that moment. What can you do? And the final thing is to support the effort, to support the community. If you have time, go lie down on the street, or on the sidewalk, or in the mall. Or go to the phone center that's offering jail support to those who've been arrested. Or lead a conversation about what is happening. Or call your representatives. Do something that helps affect change and end racism in our world. And so I close today with this bit of wisdom. It is hard, yes, and we are enough to face the struggles before us. It is hard, yes, but the world has been transformed and continues to be. The only evidence I need is the fact that marriage is now legal in Mississippi. Change comes, no matter how slowly. And all we have to do is say yes when we are called. It's tough, just as it is to go from thinking about all the struggles that we face to singing a song like The Spirit Says Do and dancing and smiling while we do it. Because there is struggle, yes, but there is joy. And we do this because we fight for that joy, for that love, and for that beauty. Not just for our loved ones, but for all people in the world. So may you go forth in this day offering your presence, your witness, your loving kindness. May you heal the world and its wounds, one stitch at a time. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. I invite you to stretch a little bit. The one thing I know about talking about these kinds of things is that tension lives in your body. When you're feeling particularly stressed, go for a walk, turn on a song and dance and sing into, you know, your hairbrush, whatever you need to do. Or like I said with my grandma, she'd just twiddle her fingers and that was enough. Whatever it is, use your body, it's what it's for. So I invite you now to join in singing hymn number 1014, Standing on the Side of Love. You to face across the aisle or across the chandelier, as the case may be, at your neighbors. This is our holy and sacred community, holy because of our witness and sacred because of our hands, our hearts, and our action. May you know you are enough. And in these days of struggle, may you lament, may you share your sorrow, your anger, your fear, and your struggle. And may you engage in acts of joy and beauty. For through our presence, our world is made whole. In the words of Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman, keep fresh before us the moments of our highest resolve, that in good times or in tempests, in fair weather or in foul, we may not forget that to which our lives are committed. Keep fresh before you the moments of your highest resolve. May it be so. Please.